ladies and gents, and welcome to the Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast, your one-stop pro wrestling shop. Now, we hope you're having a kick-ass week so far, and you're all geared up for some grappling goodness. I'll be joined shortly by the Ric Flair to my Arn Anderson, Sam Whaley, to talk this week in pro wrestling, and our favourite SummerSlam moments as well. But before all that, just a quick heads up to let you know, we'll be taking a week off next week, so we'll return the following week for some more Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast, just in case you wondered where we'd got to. But that's not till next week, and this week we've got an action-packed show. So right now, let's kick it off with World of Trios. World of Trios. All right, folks, and welcome to World of Trios, brought to you by Win Column Sports. I'm joined by my good bud Sam Whaley. How you doing, man?
I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, cheers, man. Just packing up to go on holiday and stuff, so should be killer, man. Should be killer. So first up, let's talk our top three things in pro wrestling this week.
Top three this week.
So the first thing I want to talk about is something from Raw this week, and it's an awesome promo by Paul Heyman. I mean, just catching everyone up, last week, Brock Lesnar pretty much turned on Paul Heyman. He kind of laid out Kurt Angle for firing Paul Heyman, and then he turned on Paul himself. This week, we get a sit-down interview with Renee Young, joined by Paul Heyman, and basically, Paul Heyman looks like a shadow of his former self. He's unshaven, his eyes are watering, he's barely able to speak, and it just came across as this really emotionally rich promo where he kind of talks about how afraid he is of Brock Lesnar and how Roman Reigns should be too, because this Brock Lesnar, you know, has no boundaries, has no limits. Roman Reigns doesn't have a chance. What did you think of this one, dude?
I don't know. It was quite a it was quite emotional, wasn't it? You don't like to see Paul Heyman in this sort of light. You like to see him as the evil manager. You don't like to see him as the broken man character. With the loss of Brock Lesnar, or the apparent loss of Brock Lesnar, I guess there's a huge part of Paul Heyman missing there as well.
Yeah, he came across as completely directionless, didn't he, really? He seemed to not really know what he was going to do going forward. And the way that Brock had kind of treated him, it didn't seem like him and you had to process that, really. I mean, I've been going back and watching stuff from when Brock first came in. Obviously, Heyman was with him then. They've been like a force to be reckoned with ever since about, what, 2002, 2003?
Yeah, it's been a hell of a long time.
Yeah, and since Brock's come back, I think he came back 2012, Heyman's been pretty much by his side. So this side of Brock is a completely different one, because obviously he's got his mind set on the UFC. He doesn't really care about kind of anything to do with the WWE right now, as we saw last week with him sitting backstage reading magazines, not wanting to come out. And Heyman doesn't seem to know how to react to any of this, especially since Brock pretty much turned his back on him, attacking him last week. So yeah, I don't know what direction this is going to go in. I've been thinking, could it all be a big ruse? Or are they kind of trying to make Brock out to be this dominant force that even Paul Heyman cannot control?
Well, it's going to be one of those things, isn't it, where you, whether it's going to end badly or whether it's going to be one of the greatest things you've ever seen in your life, it grabs your interest.
Yeah.
So, you know, whichever way, like I say, whichever way it works, your interest is grabbed. And now, you know, me included, people are starting to want to see Roman versus Brock again. Because there's actually something being thrown into there. There's now a storyline to this. It's not just Roman versus Brock again.
A real reason to watch. Yeah.
There's a reason to watch, because there's a potential of something happening.
Yeah, and what struck me the most here, I think, was this whole interview. It came across as very Paul Heyman written, if you know what I mean. It didn't come across as very WWE. I mean, you've got Heyman unshaven, completely like eyes watering, unable to speak. It doesn't seem like something that WWE put on TV every week. It seemed tremendously real. Renee Young played it perfectly as well. She didn't know what to say to him. She was asking him if he wanted to continue. It was just fantastic stuff. And I wish they'd sell things like this more often, because I'd be so much more invested.
Yeah, the power of Paul Heyman promos. That's a lot of P's.
Totally, totally. Alliteration is king, man. But yeah, fantastic stuff from Raw. Moving on to our second point. £10 of Gold, which is the NWA Wrestling from Hollywood kind of YouTube show. Fantastic this past week. It was all about the build-up to Cody versus Nick Aldis at the All In pay-per-view. And it's seeming to be a bit of a Cody Rhodes redemption story, really. We got this awesome recap of a tremendous Ring of Honor confrontation between Nick Aldis and Cody. First up, Cody kind of talks about how much he loves his wife and how far he's come since being in WWE and kind of rising to this challenge of booking a 10,000 kind of people show, which All In is. Later on, we get Nick Aldis coming out to talk about All In. He says Cody didn't manage to win his past two Ring of Honor championship matches. So what's in it for Nick Aldis, really? I mean, all that seems to be in it for Nick Aldis is a loss of his championship, and then where does he go from there? What did you think of this, dude?
Yeah, I thought this was, once again, brilliant. I love the £10 of Gold series. The strange thing I think about both Cody Rhodes and Nick Aldis is the realism from them. They don't have a strict direction. There isn't any sort of, this is a heel, this is a face. You don't know who's who in this battle. And whether Cody is on Ring of Honor, whether he's battling for the NWA title or whatever, he's never sort of really fallen into a category. And the same goes for Nick Aldis in his current incarnation. You don't know whether he's, you know, the legendary fighting champion, or whether he is the ignorant heel.
I mean, we've talked about this before on the podcast, I think, that Nick Aldis, you've said, is he a heel? Is he a face? But because the whole NWA promotion is pretty much anchored around him, he doesn't really have to be anything because he's the star of the show. So for that kind of case, he really doesn't have to be anything. Whereas Cody Rhodes, obviously, New Japan, he's kind of one of the leaders of the Bullet Club, and Ring of Honor, the same kind of thing. And they're kind of like a tweener faction. So, yeah, we haven't got a face and heel dynamic. But because, as you mentioned, it's all so real. I mean, there is a lot of gravitas. Cody wants to win the championship that his father once held. And Nick Aldis doesn't want to lose it because it's pretty much all that makes him relevant. So, yeah. And Cody pointed that out as well. He said, you know, Nick Aldis was wondering what was in it for him. And Cody said, you know, I'm bringing you up from the penny slots to the high rollers table, pretty much. That's what's in it for you. And yeah, it was just, it was a different level of emotional, this one.
Yeah, I think this has got the potential to be a long, long, long feud. And I don't know whether you've noticed, but Nick Aldis has done quite a few Ring of Honor appearances recently as well.
Oh, the one with Flip Gordon, yeah.
Yeah, there's been a few, though. There was a tag team match as well. I can't remember who was involved, but it looks like he could be heading in that direction anyway, sort of. I mean, Ring of Honor's independent anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we might be seeing a bit more of Nick Aldis on Ring of Honor if he does lose the title.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because, as we've both mentioned before, that whole NWA promotion is anchored on Nick Aldis. So if he was to kind of move away from that, what would happen? Because it's kind of like an independent movie just starring him with, you know, various characters drifting in and out, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a great situation. It's something completely fresh for pro wrestling to have these two promotions moving alongside each other. Obviously, you've got Billy Corgan, kind of owner of the NWA, and he's wanting to keep things as fresh and relevant as possible. But I do know that having someone like Cody Rhodes on your roster makes you pretty relevant.
It's big, isn't it? There's a lot of the sort of American and British New Japan guys that also appear on Ring of Honor. I was thinking as well, do you think this could be heading towards NWA or ROH, like used to be NWA TNA back in the day?
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, Ring of Honor technically don't really need that kind of thing because they've kind of got their own following and whatnot, but the NWA does kind of need something to anchor itself to.
The NWA is like, sorry for the analogy here, but it's sort of like a parasite and it needs to feed off some sort of promotion.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not taking anything away from Championship Wrestling of Hollywood, but they're not a hugely known promotion around the world.
No.
And that's where the NWA is mainly based at the minute.
I mean, I think it's fantastic, really, that you've alerted me to NWA, really. I was kind of like, oh, do I want to get into this? Have I got the time? And you realise it's just maybe 10 minutes a week of catching up on these cool storylines, and especially since the Cody Rhodes-Nick Aldis thing's come along, it's been pretty fantastic. But you'd alerted me of the NWA before all this happened, really. So it was still managing to kind of get by with Nick having various challenges week after week. Obviously, he beat is it Tim Storm? Is that his
Tim
name?
Tim Storm.
Yeah, and Cody kind of referenced it here. He was like, "What did you do? You beat a 53-year-old maths teacher for your belt," and that was quite funny, really. But regardless of what's going on, they make these 10 pounds of gold shows, as we've mentioned before, really dramatic because they're a YouTube show. They can put awesome music underneath them to kind of give it that emotional gravitas, and they really did this here, where they kind of show that video at the end where it's Cody and Nick coming together under the All In banner, and it was just, it's something else. So
it's like I've said to you before, I think bringing Cody into the picture is, that's elevated the belt. It's almost, it's gone more like 50% further than just Nick Aldis by himself. I'm not taking anything away from Nick Aldis, because he's elevated it 100% from Tim Storm. You know, no offense to Tim Storm either, but I think he's part of the NWA sort of limbo that had happened between
limbo's
the
a good word, yeah.
Yeah, the 80s and now, you know, a long, long, long time. Now, since Billy Corgan's taken over, Nick Aldis has taken the belt, and yeah, it has been elevated. He hasn't had a huge name challenger yet, other than, like I think I've mentioned before, PJ Black. But again, PJ Black's not a household name anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely someone for them to kind of offer up to him, really, in terms of like a mid-card guy. But yeah, it's just it's totally lending a lot of kind of mystique to the 10 pounds of gold at the moment with the whole Cody Rhodes All In angle. So I'm looking forward to All In. I'm looking forward to all the matches that are getting announced along the way, because it's looking like a killer card, and no doubt we'll cover it when it happens. So yeah, totally looking forward to it. Third thing and last thing I want to cover this week is SmackDown. So we got another awesome match between The Bar and New Day, and I believe this was part of a tournament for who's to face the Bludgeon Brothers at SummerSlam.
That's right.
Now, I don't know, every time these guys face each other, it seems to be a fantastic match, and they seem to do something different every time, or just build on the kind of repertoire. And I kind of read a review of this before I watched it, and I saw 4 stars, and I was thinking, 4 stars for a TV match? Ah, God, is it going to be that good? And it really was. I mean, these guys know how to put on a show. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I really think that The Bar and The New Day have given the Undisputed Era and Mustache Mountain a run for the money here.
Yeah.
As far as TV matches go, this was fantastic. Now, I'm a huge Bar fan.
Yeah.
I love Sheamus and Cesaro. I think ever since they came together as a pairing, they've just come on in leaps and bounds. If they'd have stayed as solo characters, they would have maybe even left the company by now. You just don't know, do you? But
yeah, I mean, I'm surprised they've stayed together this long. I mean, under kind of WWE's kind of, you know, forever moving storylines and forever moving people about, it's crazy that they've managed to find each other and just stick together as this team.
They're protecting each other, but as a tag team, they're brilliant. I mean, I love the entrance. I love everything. I like the Cesaro start, and then they know that Sheamus's music is the stronger one.
Yeah.
When he stands there and you've got the blaring light behind, and then Cesaro just pops out from behind him. I love that. I think that's a brilliant thing. And then they do the Scott Hall and Kevin Nash thing as well, where they point at each other.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I never even realised that that's probably a reference, yeah.
Yeah, killer. That's great.
I think these guys do a great job. They've obviously got great chemistry. And undoubtedly, this match might be even better than the match that's coming up on the pay-per-view, because, let's face it, the Bludgeon Brothers, as great as they are, and they really can go. I mean, they did like this crazy dropkick spot in their match this week, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't quite think they've got this chemistry that these two teams have got, so I can't help but think maybe they got it wrong, the wrong way around for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's such a strange thing to watch the Bludgeon Brothers, because Eric Rowan is a huge, huge guy. I never used to think that when they were part of the Wyatt family. I would always see him as like the runt of the litter, so to speak. But you look at the pair of them now, and I feel like Rowan's grown. You see Luke Harper as sort of more of the high flyer, even though, you know, he's also a huge guy, but Rowan is definitely the power man.
Yeah, I mean, these two, they're definitely a great team together. I've heard some crazy stories about how Luke Harper actually hated Eric Rowan when they first got together. How Eric Rowan used to just, like, snore and smell really bad, and Luke Harper had it, like, you know, found it really hard to deal with him, but they eventually kind of grew to love each other as, like, people teaming and driving together on the road do. And yeah, you can definitely see that. They're pretty cohesive in terms of a team. I still think it'll be a great match at SummerSlam because all four, well, depending on who's competing out of the New Day, all four guys, fantastic. So yeah, looking forward to it, man.
Staying on the subject of tag teams, what do you think about the Revival potentially winning the title at SummerSlam?
I think it's kind of interesting because I'd kind of given up hope for the Puro Revival. They were obviously great in NXT. They really put on some great matches with people like American Alpha and whatnot, but they seem to be getting a little bit buried on Raw. But all of a sudden, something's happened. And it seems like there was a little while ago, wasn't there, where it was Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley teaming together, and the Revival kind of got in there a little bit. They got to show off a little bit their personality, and through that, I think their in-ring work has also, you know, got put on display in front of the people on the main roster as well. So
yeah, I think they gave themselves a really, really bad start, didn't they, when they went to the main roster with all the social media crap that went on. They'd mentioned something about how much harder they work than other teams on the roster. And obviously it was taken badly by, you know, long-time servers of the WWE. And I think they sort of maybe got a pushback from that, from opening the mouth far too much.
I mean, yeah, it's slightly naive to say something like that, isn't it? Because, I mean, they are a fantastic team and they did work really hard in the ring. But just because you can put on these five-star NXT matches, it doesn't mean that you're not working any harder than the guys on the main roster, because everyone's touring.
You've still got to earn your place, don't you?
Exactly. And saying stuff like that's just going to get you put in a bad spot, really, because, you know, people like Roman Reigns, they don't want to hear you saying they're not working hard.
Yeah, I believe that's what's happened here. I believe that they sort of almost dug their own grave there, but they seem to have dug their way back out again. So
yeah, I mean, they're doing an awful lot better than the poor old Authors of Pain, which is something that's a bit of a bugbear of mine. But the less we talk about that, the better, I think.
Yeah, so I've got just a little honourable mention. Obviously, we heard about the untimely passing of Brian Christopher Lawler, a.k.a. Grandmaster Sexay, just the other week. Now, last week was the funeral, and Jerry Lawler himself actually had a match booked for this week. Now, being the consummate professional that he is, he carried on with the match, even with everything that's happened over the past few weeks. And he himself said it was the toughest day of his life, the funeral of Brian Christopher, but still continued with his commitment to wrestle. Now, when I saw the picture of this, I have to admit, it almost brought a tear to my eye as well. It's the picture of Jerry Lawler as he's about to walk down to the ring, and he's wearing the Grandmaster Sexay vest to the ring as a tribute to his son, which I thought was absolutely, you know, a beautiful thing to do. And it pays a great homage to Brian himself, and obviously shows what a true professional Jerry Lawler is and how much the wrestling business means to this family.
Yeah, it was a truly classy move. Such sad news happening in the past week. And obviously, I'm sure you'll agree with me, Sam, all the love in the world going out to the Lawler family from the Is It Over Yet Wrestling podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there's another great part to this story as well that I saw on Twitter, where the match was actually against James Ellsworth, believe it or not. I mean, that might not mean much to a lot of people, but if you look on James Ellsworth's Twitter, it reads, "Just wrestled the most emotional match of my career. The words can't describe the amount of respect I have for Jerry Lawler. It's a true honour and a pleasure to share the ring with him always." And it shows a picture of James Ellsworth and Jerry Lawler in a, you know, quite a tight embrace. And it's another really emotional picture there.
It's a beautiful thing, man. Yeah, beautiful thing.
Top three SummerSlam moments.
All right, folks, and welcome back. We're going to talk about our top three SummerSlam matches or moments of all time. So first up, I'm going to let you kick this one off, Sam. I believe The first is the British Bulldog versus Bret Hart from SummerSlam 92. Tell us a bit about this one.
Yeah, now this SummerSlam is pretty special to us in particular, as this SummerSlam was held at Wembley Stadium in London.
First pay-per-view I ever saw, man. First wrestling pay-per-view I ever saw.
Yeah, all good stuff. And the reason for that is because it was on at a regular time.
Yes, that's probably...
For us. Yeah, I mean, this was the first and last time we had one of the big four in this country. I'm hoping that happens again at some point soon.
Yeah.
Now, the match we're going to talk about is, as you say, the British Bulldog versus Bret Hart. And this was for the Intercontinental Championship as well. So that was another rare thing of the Intercontinental Championship being the headline match. I think we know the reason for this. It's because the Bulldog was involved, and obviously we need the local hero being in the main event in such a rare situation like this. Now, I've heard a lot of things about this match. One of them, from reading Bret Hart's book, is that the British Bulldog was in absolutely no condition to perform that night.
I've heard this too, man.
Now, you don't get the British Bulldog's view on this because, obviously, unfortunately, he's passed away. But from what Bret says, he carried him throughout the entire match and made him look $1 million.
He certainly did. I mean, this match still looks crisp.
Yeah, If what Bret says is true, then you know he's more of a legend than I already think anyway. But yeah, the match is brilliant. It's 25 minutes long. Another rarity for back in those days anyway.
Yeah,
they didn't really have many long matches in the sort of 90s, did they?
Yeah,
leading upwards. But yeah, absolutely fantastic match. Great back and forth action, some brilliant power moves from the Bulldog, some brilliant technical moves from Bret Hart, and it was an emotional one as well, an emotional finish to the match too.
Yeah, they often played on the fact that Bret's sister Diana was in the audience, you know, not knowing who to root for, that kind of thing. It was a fantastic showing from both guys. And I think Bret was kind of getting into that kind of ring general mode at this time. Obviously, he'd always been fantastic in the ring, but he was getting into being that match leader. And as you spoke about, he obviously had to do that here if Davey wasn't in much of a fit state. But yeah, one of the all-time classics. And I think it often tops the kind of the SummerSlam moments, really, because it was just a big pay-per-view for WWF.
Very special to us. And you've also got to think to yourself as well that 1992, this is very early in Bret's career.
Yep. In terms of his singles run, yeah, of course, because, I mean, I can't remember if this was before or after, but he was just about to go on to beat Ric Flair for the World Championship that same year. So big things were coming for Bret. Vince obviously knew that Bret could carry a main event here, so it turned out to be one of the all-time greats. The next one I want to talk about is The Undertaker versus Mankind in a boiler room brawl, and that was at SummerSlam 96. So I feel like this match was a bit of a precursor to all of the hardcore matches that were to come in WWE. Obviously, someone had been watching a bit of ECW, maybe some of the whole backstage stuff that WCW were doing at the time, and they thought, let's film something in a boiler room. But yeah, it turned out to be a really great match. Not much technical wrestling going on, and not many wrestling holds been done. But if you like things kind of brawling and all action, this is definitely the match for you. I don't think that this match came across too good for the live audience, though, because I think it was filmed kind of prior to the whole pay-per-view. So the live audience kind of had to watch it on like a little video screen type thing. So I think as a kid at home watching this pay-per-view, it came across pretty cool to me because obviously I loved The Undertaker and Mankind was just this bizarre, weird heel that you didn't really know what to expect.
Yeah, like you were saying, I think a lot of people have spoken about this before as well. The live crowd were kind of dead for this one because, like you said, they only had the tiny little screen. It's not like they have now with the giant Titantron. But as a fan at home, this was something completely different, wasn't it? I mean, I heard as well that there was different parts edited together as well, so not only was this a live show, but they were putting recorded parts into there mixed with live parts as well. So the actual live editing itself was brilliant. And yeah, like you say, it takes it forward into the sort of hardcore element of WWE going forward from that moment, and then obviously a lot of other promotions carried on from there too.
Yeah, definitely, and I think this was kind of the second time that WWF had tried this, because I think previously they'd done a Hollywood backlot brawl with Goldust and Rowdy Roddy Piper, which was this pre-film thing where they filmed Goldust being chased by Rowdy Roddy Piper on like the highways in America, and then a big fight in the backlots. Oh,
yeah, was that the one where they used footage from an actual TV show?
Yeah,
just stole it. Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think that went kind of well. I mean, it's not a five-star classic. It's just basically a 5 to 10 minute action movie edited into a pay-per-view. But same kind of thing here. But I think it's the aftermath here that's talked about the most, because obviously Paul Bearer ends up turning on The Undertaker. So the whole point is these guys need to get back to the ring to get the urn from Paul Bearer. Undertaker kind of goes for it and gets smashed over the head for his efforts. Paul Bearer then aligns himself with Mankind, and from then on we get the kind of heel Paul Bearer, who would eventually introduce Undertaker's brother Kane. So this whole match acts as a little precursor to everything that would happen within the whole Attitude Era storyline, Undertaker, Kane, Ministry of Darkness, everything that would kind of roll forward from then on. So pretty special SummerSlam match.
Yeah, this was also a really long one as well. This was 26 minutes and 40 seconds.
Crikey. Man, I don't remember it being that long. It must be an okay match.
Yeah, that is a long time for a hardcore style match, isn't it? But you get so sucked into these types of things, don't you?
Yeah, of course, man. Yeah, it wasn't a classic by any means, but it was definitely one of the better moments of SummerSlam, I'd say. All right, and last but not least, we've got a more recent addition to the SummerSlam legacy here, and it's Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins to crown the first ever Universal Champion. What do you think about this match, man?
It's the beginning of the sort of smaller guy era. I know it was only a couple of years ago, but you know, even before this, you're still putting big guys in there, even when they were sort of, let's bring The Rock back, let's bring Batista back, you know, bringing guys back. But at this point, and with the introduction of the new belt as well, it's let's show the workers of the Federation.
Yeah, of course, and I believe there was like a tournament to build up to this, and these two kind of qualified for the match. It was definitely a riveting match. We got a lot of action, as per both of these two guys. It's all kind of like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart style wrestling, you know, the smaller guys, as you mentioned. But unfortunately, the ending of this match, as great as it was for Finn Balor, being crowned the first ever Universal Champion, he also suffered an injury, didn't he?
Yeah, so of course, the next night on Raw, he then had to forfeit the belt, which even to this day now, he still hasn't had his rematch.
No, and I don't think to this day he's ever risen to that level again in terms of you know, bigger championship opportunities for him. So it's a real shame that this had to happen to Finn, because I think had it not, he would have kind of been on a bit more of a roll. You know, he may have showcased his demon character a bit more. I don't know, man. Rewrite history.
Sort of one of the last times we've seen the demon. I think, you know, we've maybe seen him a couple of times more since then, but around that time, the demon character came out at every single pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's true. And why do you think they're not utilising that as much today?
I don't know. I mean, I'm aware that it takes a good few hours for Finn to get the makeup on.
Yeah.
But surely, you know, from the point of view of an entertainment company, that can't be the reason why he's not doing it.
I think Vince McMahon just likes his smile, you know? Finn Balor smiles a hell of a lot these days. Like, way more than I remember in NXT. I think Vince is like, no, he's not a demon. He's too happy to be a demon. I don't know, man. I have literally no idea why that's not showcased more. But this was a great match. Just an unfortunate ending. Obviously, Seth Rollins has gone on to do bigger things, and hopefully Finn will too, but yeah.
And hopefully the Universal Championship will too as well.
It's coming home.
It's coming home. I like that one.
All right.
Just another side note here. Do you remember what happened at the end of this pay-per-view?
No. Talk to me.
It was the one with Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton.
Oh, man. That was... Oh, Randy Orton got a mud hole stomped in him.
Yeah, that was a... It was horrendous, wasn't it?
It was not only a bit of a clunker of a match. I mean, the build was strange because it was quite believable that maybe Randy Orton would be the one. So that actually ended the pay-per-view.
It did indeed, yeah. So the last thing you saw was Randy Orton laying there in a pool of blood while once again old Brocky walks out with the smile on his face.
Yeah, man, yeah. Weird ending to a pay-per-view after such a historic moment, but what can you do? What can you do?
Trios Review.
So this week we're going to be talking about a comic that we were sent recently, a wrestling comic called Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia from Suspicious Behavior Comics. Now this comic kind of centers around the main character Rock and Roll Rory Landell as he makes his way through this kind of comic wrestling wonderland. What do you think about this comic, dude?
I thought this was absolutely brilliant. When I opened the comic and had a look at the artwork, I thought that was absolutely spectacular stuff.
Really pops out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really similar to the the Marvel style comics, the sort of action style, but also with an adult element as well. I don't think this is a comic for kids, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked the storyline. I enjoyed the characters. Like I say, I loved the artwork. It's been a long, long, long time since I've read a comic, even, back to the days of the Dandy and Beano for me.
Yeah, man, I really love this one. I thought it was beautifully illustrated. It really pops out. It's, like, kind of really richly drawn, and there's a lot of textures and stuff like that. It's fantastic. It's also really funny, as you mentioned. It's kind of more of an adult twist. But it features some of the old kind of wrestling cliches in there, such as, like, wrestling bears and whatnot, which I found really funny. But yeah, the story was really strong. It really picks up the steam over issue 2, and I'm looking forward to issue 3 if we get around to that. I'd advise anyone to go and pick this up. Right, and for all the information that you need on this comic, you can go to their Twitter site, which is at SBP_comics. These guys are awesome. We can't say enough good stuff about them. So yeah, check them out.
A mark in history. Get it?
Hey there, and welcome to A Mark in History. This week marks Hulk Hogan's last match in the WWF. Now, as we know, Hogan's final pay-per-view match was against Yokozuna at King of the Ring 93, with Yokozuna picking up the win after a cameraman's camera exploded in Hogan's eye. This was seen as the last of Hulkamania in WWF and helped boost Yokozuna's monster heel gimmick with a win over the previous generation's top star. However, his last true match in the WWF happened August 6th, 1993, to a sellout crowd in Sheffield, England, which is almost home turf for the IIOI podcast. This was against Yokozuna once more, as he'd continued to feud with him over the summer at house shows. He picked up the DQ win here to ensure the belt stayed with Yokozuna as Hogan was about to leave the company. Now, why did Hogan leave? Well, after Hollywood came calling with films like Suburban Commando and Mr. Nanny, Hulk got a taste for this kind of thing, and he left to further pursue his acting career with a TV show, Thunder in Paradise. It's a kind of Knight Rider-esque show, but with a boat instead of a car. We all know that the hiatus from wrestling did not last, as by the summer of 1994, Hogan had signed with the main WWF competitor WCW. And we all know how that story goes, but that's one for another day. Brother! Alright, folks, and welcome to our most over segment.
Over like Rover. Oh yeah, dig it!
So each week, Sam and I give you two superstars that we think are the most over that week. So we put two superstars up last week. Who did we put up on our poll, Sam?
Last week, we had the British wrestling legends in both Zack Sabre Jr. and Grado.
Okie doke, man. Good choices from us, I think. And who won that poll?
The poll was won by Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh, okay. Good deal. He's been having a good showing at the New Japan G1 Climax recently, so that's pretty cool. But I gotta say, Grado has been performing pretty damn well on World of Sports, so it was a close one, man.
It really was. Yeah, we got a hell of a lot of votes from that one. I think that's one of our highest vote tallies we've ever had.
Awesome stuff, man. Awesome stuff. And can I ask, who is your most over this week?
Now, this week, I'm going to pick another from World of Sport. Oh. Now, you may think I'm becoming a World of Sport mark here, but
no.
It's somebody who you know that I've liked for a long, long, long time, and okay. It's Kaylee Ray.
Oh, okay. And why Kaylee Ray?
She won the first ever World of Sport women's title this Saturday night. I've liked Kaylee Ray for a number of years. I've not got to see her wrestle a lot recently. So seeing her again on Saturday just brought back the memories. And yeah, she's my most over.
Awesome, dude. I can't say I've seen a lot of her, but I will be watching a lot more World of Sport to kind of catch up. This week, I think my pick is going to be none other than Nick Aldis. And my reason is I think the guy is doing a tremendous job at not only carrying the whole NWA brand, but kind of moving it closer to the mainstream in the guise of the All-In pay-per-view and his match against Cody Rhodes. I look forward to that match. I think he's a fantastic character, whether he's playing that kind of heel face, whatever we discussed previously. So yeah, Nick Aldis this week for me.
The true national treasure.
Indeed. All right, folks, this has been another awesome episode of the Is It Over Yet Wrestling podcast. Don't forget to follow us on all of our social media sites. So you can find us at Twitter, and that's twitter.com/IIOY podcast, Facebook, and that's facebook.com/IsItOverYetPod, and SoundCloud, and that's Is It Over Yet Pod. Don't forget, you can also search for us on Spotify and iTunes, and you can just find us by searching Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast.
And of course, please don't forget to check out our good friends at Win Column Sports, and that's on Twitter at WCSportsCA.
All right, well, we'll see you next week for another awesome episode of the Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast. Take it easy.
Thanks, guys. Bye.